All right, next up we'll have Paxton Dixon. He's a surgical oncologist from the University of Tennessee, and he'll be talking to us about bowel perforation and free air in the cancer patient.
All right, I have no financial disclosures to make. Really, the only disclosure I have is that any recommendations or suggestions that I make this afternoon are largely subjective, anecdotal, and really based on a paucity of data regarding this specific topic. It is well documented that emergency surgery for bowel perforation is associated with increased morbidity, mortality, and healthcare cost. And certainly these issues can be further amplified in cancer patients due to decreased physiologic reserve, immunosuppression, and malnutrition that are related to both the cancer process as well as cancer-directed therapies. And these factors can increase the complexity in how to best manage a patient who presents with pneumoperitoneum or intestinal perforation. There are a number of reasons for which cancer patients may be at an increased risk for intestinal perforation, and these can include just local tumor invasion, immunosuppression, the receipt of cytotoxic therapy, and more importantly, probably biologic therapies, some of which have a known associated increased risk with intestinal perforation. Most people in the room are familiar with the known associations of with intestinal perforation with agents such as bevacizumab and other anti-VEGF directed therapies. We've had a few patients over the last, we've had two patients over the last few years at our institution who were on immune checkpoint inhibitor therapy for metastatic melanoma, developed ipilimumab-related colitis, and perforated while being observed on the floor. Certainly, some of these patients have had portions of their bowel radiated, and a lot of these patients are subjected to an increased number of either endoscopic or interventional radiology procedures that also have a known associated risk with intestinal perforation. I think it's important to consider a number of factors when deciding how to best manage these patients, and just to carry on the theme that has been already mentioned in the prior two talks, it's very important to understand what the cancer diagnosis for that patient is, what is the current stage and extent of their disease, and what is their prognosis related to their cancer with regards to expected survival. What recent treatments have they received with regards to chemotherapy, biologic agents, or steroid therapy that may impact your surgical decision making? Again, portions of the bowel that may have received radiation therapy. What is the patient's current performance status prior to the perforation? And how do they present in the acute event? I mean, is this someone with diffuse peritonitis and fulminant sepsis, or someone with a mild change in their vital signs and focal tenderness? It's very important to consider what the surgical and non-surgical options for these patients are, and very importantly, what the patient's wishes and expectations are with regards to the outcomes for their cancer diagnosis. I think that just like in treating their cancer in these patients, it's very important that we tailor a patient-centered approach to manage perforation in this setting. And this, it is important to have a multidisciplinary discussion, not a labor-intensive discussion in a conference, but a regrouping of the people that have been involved in this patient's care or the people who may need to become involved in this patient's care during this acute setting. As a surgeon, you may already have a relationship with the patient that you've developed as part of their cancer therapy, or you may become involved as a consultant at the time of at the time that they've presented with a perforation. I think it is important to touch base with that patient's medical oncologist to really understand what where they are in their treatment, what treatment options they have, and get a realistic expectation of what their overall prognosis is related to their cancer. And certainly, we need to develop relationships, as already been mentioned, with our interventional radiology and gastroenterology colleagues to know what other options we have in non-operatively managing these patients in certain occasions. And importantly, it's also there are many instances in these patients in which palliative care our palliative care colleagues need to be brought into the discussion. So we're going to discuss some cases later, I know, but just a few two brief cases that I think highlight the spectrum for which these patients can present and how they can be managed. The first is a 64-year-old female with a history of breast cancer who has diffuse skeletal metastasis and was being treated with bevacizumab and zoledronate for her bone mets. And she presented to her medical oncologist office with the acute onset of abdominal pain. A CT scan was obtained at their office and showed a large amount of pneumoperitoneum. Now, this patient otherwise had an excellent performance status, very active, otherwise, you know, a well-nourished, outside of her cancer diagnosis, a generally healthy patient. So in discussion with her medical oncologist, he felt that despite her bone metastasis, she had several months, if not a few years left of life expectancy related to her cancer. And so we managed this patient much like we would have managed a non-cancer patient with a perforation. We suspected that this was probably a pyloric channel perforation based on her scans and the presentation, and indeed she had a small pre-pyloric ulcer that had perforated. We patched it and just kind of wrung our hands because she had been on bevacizumab that our patch and her incision would heal, but fortunately she did very well and went on to live another 2.5 years. Contrary to that is a 70-year-old man who presents with stage 4 colon cancer with liver and peritoneal metastases. Primary tumor was located in the sigmoid colon and had never been resected based on his initial presenting symptoms and the extent of disease at diagnosis. He had undergone several lines of chemotherapy and came through the emergency department with worsening abdominal pain. The patient was very deconditioned, malnourished, and according to his family, had become progressively sedentary. As you can see on his scan, he's got ascites and then a focal area of pneumoperitoneum. Discussion with his medical oncologist was that, you know, he was really at the end of the line in terms of future therapies. And so initially he was managed with antibiotics and bowel rest, but very quickly the palliative care physicians became involved in his case and the family and the patient elected to transition to hospice and he expired within 3 days. So our options for managing patients with pneumoperitoneum and perforation who have a diagnosis for cancer are varied. And just like with bowel obstructions, there is no one perfect answer and the management strategy needs to be tailored to the patient. The benefits to proceeding with a comfort care approach may be that it avoids the discomfort and potential complications associated with laparotomy. And for some patients and their families, this may actually bring desired closure to their terminal condition. However, it also may result in the unanticipated shortened survival for these patients. There are select patients, as we'll discuss a bit more, that can be managed non-operatively with bowel rest and or antibiotics and or drains or endoscopically placed stents in some occasions. Again, avoids potential complications and the discomfort associated with a laparotomy. And this may hasten their time to recovery and reinitiation of cancer therapy. However, these patients have to be closely observed because certainly they may deteriorate clinically and require going to surgery, and there's a group that may lose a chance for meaningful recovery. And then most commonly, though, these patients still are managed surgically, and most of us feel comfortable taking these patients to the operating room to avoid rapid clinical deterioration and potential death. However, you know, surgical management is certainly is associated with further complications in this group of patients, and in some cases it may prohibit them going on to receive further cancer therapy. So really one of the only studies to look specifically at this group of patients is authored by one of our moderators, Dr. Badgewell, in a retrospective review of 124 patients at MD Anderson Cancer Center. And 19 patients were treated with comfort care, 33 were managed initially with a non-operative approach, and 72 patients underwent upfront surgical therapy. As you can see, the majority of these patients were stage 4 at the time that they presented with pneumoperitoneum or perforation, and the majority of the perforations were from a small bowel or colorectal source. For the patients who underwent operative intervention, as you would suspect, the majority of them required intestinal resection, and there was a high rate of stoma creation. There were four patients in the non-operative management group that did clinically deteriorate and required operative intervention. And then there were three patients that underwent upfront operative intervention in which no site of perforation could be identified. And a fourth patient who was found to have extensive carcinomatosis, really prohibiting any meaningful surgical intervention. And looking at the short-term in-hospital outcomes for these patients, the length of stay and the in-hospital complication rates were significantly lower for patients managed non-operatively versus those who underwent upfront surgery. But the 30-day mortality for the two groups was the same. And in looking at their long-term outcomes with related to overall survival, there was no difference in overall survival between the patients managed non-operatively versus those managed with surgery. And so, you know, the majority of these patients do ultimately undergo an operation, but there are a select group of patients based on clinical judgment and the resources that you have available with regards to what you can do with your interventional and or gastroenterology colleagues to manage some of these patients non-operatively. And then I think just finally, this is warrants mentioning is that there are occasions where perforation will be the initial presentation for a cancer diagnosis. About 1 to 3% of gastric cancers will present with perforation. The management of these at the time of a laparotomy needs to be tailored based on the site of the perforation, the palpable extent of tumor within the stomach, the patient's clinical status, and any extent of disease found within the abdomen. About 5% of colon cancers will present with perforation. Certainly this can be from perforation at the tumor site or a cecal perforation from a distal obstructing tumor. Again, the management should be tailored based on the site and nature of the perforation, and the extent of contamination and any other disease identified at laparotomy. And then also lymphomas will occasionally present with perforation, most common sites being the stomach and small bowel. And for small bowel, these almost exclusively require resection. For patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma involving the stomach, this is often a very diffuse process, and resection can be difficult. And so patching those patients and then getting them onto chemotherapy is probably the best option for them. So just to finish up, I think that pneumoperitoneum and intestinal perforation in the cancer patient is more complicated to manage than the non-cancer patient. It's very important to keep things simple and safe with a priority on quality of life, particularly with patients who have incurable or rapidly progressive disease. And an individualized approach with multidisciplinary discussion is recommended.